Good evening. You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening. I'm Al Voner, and this is The Public Eye. Nice to have you with us this weekend. As always, and you know me, I'm a bookworm, and I like to come across some very interesting books, and one that came across my my desk not too long ago, entitled Roots of Liberalism. And we've been fortunate enough to have the author, F.H. Buckley. Mr. Buckley is also a not only an author, but he's also a law school professor at George Mason University. And for the next half hour, we'll be talking with Frank Buckley and getting his sense on the reasons and the motivations for writing the book. Frank, nice to have you with us.
Well, Al, thank you for having me.
You and I talked a little bit before the broadcast, and we got a big election coming up. We got another presidential election coming up in a few weeks, and from my vantage point, people are all over the board, and that's beside the point. There's nothing you or I can do anything about that. It's just the way it is. But more importantly, something in the back of your mind long ago, in putting the thoughts together for this book, The Roots of Liberalism. But I wanted to ask you this because I think first and foremost, it's pretty important. Liberalism, as I know it, as you know it, we're a little bit older. We've come up over the generations. I've got a neighbor who considers himself liberal, and another one that considers himself conservative, and that's really what it was. Much of that has changed now, and even in reading your book, I think you would agree. And I want to get your sense on this. The roots of liberalism and liberalism as we know it or knew it. No longer stands. Is that a correct approach?
Well, it's threatened. At least in the past, the fact that liberalism is an honorable and a noble tradition was basically accepted by everybody. And here I'm talking about liberalism, in the tradition of Washington and Jefferson and Lincoln. But I started to write the book about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and at that time, people didn't want to be called liberals anymore. I mean, on the progressive left, the woke-a-ratty were people who had moved beyond that. And then, sadly, on the right, you have anti-liberals as well. And I thought, this is not the kind of country I grew up in. And I miss that kind of liberalism. I mean, as I mentioned to you before the break, I see myself as an Eisenhower Republican or a JFK Democrat. I see myself as somebody basically in the middle of the road. I was feeling a bit lonely, frankly. I mean, I wasn't finding all that many liberals around. And so I thought, where's it all come from? Okay, and so I wrote this book, The Roots of Liberalism, and what I concluded is, this is not some abstract philosophy, right? Liberalism is not a doctrine preached by John Locke or by some modern philosopher. Rather, it's a set of traditions in our culture, a set of moral heroes that we automatically revere. And so I went into that. And what I thought, what I concluded is, there's no one root. There's no one source to liberalism. There's no one oracle. There's no one guru, right? Rather, there are a whole bunch of sources in our culture. And when you add them all up, this is our tradition. It's the Western tradition. It's a Judeo-Christian tradition. And it's a very noble one. And the more you look into it, the more admirable it seems.
And as I said at the outset, that you and I grew up at a time where you could walk out your front door, and even if you were a liberal, even if you were a conservative, you could talk to your neighbor, you could talk to your best friend, you could talk to within a group of people, and you may be on opposite sides in terms of theory or philosophy, But you also learned something, and there was this, if you will, this melding of ideas. But as you stress in the book, that that one label, liberal, no longer confirms that all those that would 30 or 40 years ago would fall under that umbrella do so anymore. And in fact, you even go as far as to say that liberals have lost their way. Is it fair to say that that maybe they've been misinformed, or that they have become more radical in their beliefs? I mean, what causes someone who's held a belief for so long to all of a sudden take another path, if you will?
Well, right. I think the basic thing is back then. And I go back to an era of hula hoops and Davy Crockett caps. I'm older than you are. So, I go back then. When I think of what it was like back then, there were liberals, there were conservatives, there were Republicans, there were Democrats, but there weren't people who were divided on basic issues, right? If you poke these guys and said, well, do you believe in X? We all come down to pretty much the same thing, and we all love our country. Back then, love of country was something associated, in a way, more with the left than with the right. I mean, the right still had illusions about our connection with Britain. We're basically a British nation, and which is not true, right? But it was the left that loved the idea of Americana in music, for example. This land is your land, Woody Guthrie. Mm. This is a person who loves America, mm-hmm. right? And so that was absent. Wasn't seen so much. Okay, I don't see it so much, but it was really strong when we were kids, right? And there is something noble about the American experiment. So, indeed, it seems to me that when you think about our roots in leaders like Washington and Jefferson and Lincoln, that which is not liberal, it's not American, right? I mean, we're defined as Americans by our fidelity to the creed of the founders, right?
Correct.
The words of the Declaration.
Right.
So if you don't believe in that, you're less than American. Hey, you want to know something? I mean, I'm an immigrant, right? I came here from Canada. So, Canada's a country that invented anti-Americanism, okay? So, hey, I know whereof I speak.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I can recognize what is authentically American and liberal and all of that. And that's a great tradition. And it's one which, where the right way was unclear, was clouded. But in the end, when we had to, we came down the right way, right? We allowed ourselves for a long time to ignore racial injustices. And then, we had to face it squarely, and when that happened, we all supported the 1964 Civil Rights Bill. Mm-hmm. I mean, we came out right in the end.
Right.
So I thought, okay, this is a great tradition, and where does it all come from? And I found these weird sources. One of them was chivalry. Okay, and you can ask, hey, knights in shining armor, what's all that about? I mean, come on. Okay, but the traditions of chivalry are embedded in our culture. I mean, when did you see a Western where the good guy shoots somebody in the back or draws first, right? So,
right.
Those instincts are there, okay? And it all goes back to tales of knighthood. There's a famous story in chivalry about the Battle of Poitiers, where the Black Knight defeated the King of France, captured him, and that knight served him as a waiter at table and said, you should be proud, you were captured, but you fought bravely, and so you should be proud of what happened today. So there's a tradition of magnanimity, which I found expressed in the Geneva Convention. I mean, the Code of Chivalry is a proto-version of the Geneva Convention. And when we had to look at at how George W. Bush conducted the second Iraq War, right, the Supreme Court reined him in, right, by requiring fidelity to the principles of the Geneva Convention. And that was a moment of chivalry, right? The best person who expressed that was Colin Powell, right? Powell at one point was asked, this is the first Gulf War, he was asked, you know, why didn't you go into Baghdad and take out Saddam Hussein, which we didn't. You know,
right, right.
You know, which was, I think, the wise decision. But what Powell said is, look, at that point, there wasn't an Iraqi army. There was nothing left of it, right? There were a lot of people who were dead. There were tanks screwing all over the highway. He said to go further would be unchivalrous and un-American. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right? We're a chivalrous nation in that respect.
Yeah.
And, you know, and when, for example, we discovered moments of something less than chivalry, a brutal behavior like Abu Ghraib, all of a sudden we realized, no, no, that's not us. We can't have that. And we switched.
And I think most people, Frank, would agree that that's always been the, you know, if nothing less, the foundation. Whether two people can agree in the same room on the same issues, the fact of the matter was it all came back to the fact that, you know, we love, as you said, love of country, chivalry, and many of those other aspects. I want to take a quick pause and come right back, but I want to remind listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Vone, your host. My guest this week is F.H. Buckley, author of the new book, Roots of Liberalism. Roots of Liberalism. He's also a professor at the School of Law at the George Mason University, and we're talking about Frank's book. Frank, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, there has to be, at some point, you know, you can call it what you want, but, you know, the people of this country, I mean, for years I've heard differences. I've heard difference of opinions. I've heard people argue back and forth. But at the end of the day, they could certainly shake hands and say, but you know what? We are still all Americans. We're in this together. This is our country. Good, bad, or indifferent. We can work to change things that we're not pleased with or we're not happy with. Today, there seems to be and that's where that conservative kind of liberalism, you know, that was the dividing path, but that, you know, that's where it was. Today, there seems to be such a fragmentation of ideas, of opinions, of approaches to problems. And many people, and I think you'd agree, and I want to get your sense on this, because it's neither conservative or liberal in its purest sense. You know, many people just say, I hate this country. You know, good, bad, or indifferent. I hate this country. And you know, that certainly gets my blood boiling because I'm saying, you know, the grass isn't always greener. But you know, what would cause, you know, maybe social media, maybe the way people get their news today, and, you know, it's 24/7 as opposed to the way you and I used to get it with black and white newspapers, Walter Cronkite, you know, it was very different 30, 40, 50 years ago. But why so much fragmentation today?
Well, one thing you pointed to before is social media. I think there's a lot to that. You know, hatred is kind of like an infectious disease. You know, you take a person individually and you give them a moral choice and they'll probably come up with, you know, something sounding reasonable to most people. But you put them in with a group of other people and it's like everybody wants to raise the ante, right? So that you show them a picture of something and people say, this is outrageous. I really think we should fine that person. The other person says, fine him. I think we should throw him in jail, right? You know, and the fourth person will say, no, we need to execute him. It's a sickness that grows of itself, that spreads itself like a disease. And social media, because you contact with other people, makes it worse in that respect. If you don't have social media, you're dealing with people face-to-face. And you know what? It's a little harder to hate people face-to-face.
Right.
So there is that difference.
The other thing I wanted to bring up, because you mentioned it in the book, I mean, you know, obviously the terms conservative and liberalism, I think many people That resonates with many people. They've heard it for years now. It's been part and parcel of this country. But new terms have evolved from that, Frank. One such thing is woke or progressivism. And I have found, you know, many people identify with that rather than Democrat or Republican, conservative or liberal. So is there something that we need to be overly concerned about, as you said, where you cannot get, you can bring 100 people together under one roof, and now all 100 may have a completely different approach or a different opinion about the country in general, about the leadership of this country? Does that warrant a warning light?
Yeah, well, labels don't matter. I mean, take the label progressive, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Progressive was a term that was popular in, you know, the turn of the last century. So who were the progressives? Well, they were people like Teddy Roosevelt. And in the FDR administration, a lot of the brain stress people came to him as Republicans. Harry the Hop, for example. And there were about five Republican senators who supported FDR at that point. So, you know, the label is itself okay. But what one objects to is really the anger that's so prevalent today, and which I think in time will play itself out. I mean, you can't stay angry all the time. You have to get over it at some point. But you know, I'm not even going to worry about that.
Right.
As we look at the election is not going to be decided by the 45% on one side or the 45% on the other side. It's going to be decided by the people in the middle. And, you know, that solid group of people in the middle are the people who decide elections. You know, frankly, they are in many cases Catholic, right? Catholics are the median voter in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're not plugged into the news so much as other people. Maybe they're not so emotionally invested in it all. Like, maybe they have a life. and for that reason, they're not going to be swept into passionate hatreds of one kind or another.
Right.
But these are the sensible people who, you know, when it was necessary, provided the crucial support for things like the 64 Civil Rights Bill or the revolt against George W. Bush's war. So this is where kind of a sensible middle is, and these people are liberals. So, you know, once again, when I looked at all of that, I said, well, you know, where does it all come from? I mentioned just now, for example, the Code of Chivalry. I'll give you one more example of that, an odd one, I think you'll find. You know, the idea of chivalry gave us the idea of a gentleman, of gentlemanly behavior,
right,
which is an important source of liberalism. And, you know, one example of that is the code of hockey. Now, you're up in Massachusetts, so some of your listeners will remember a guy called Stan Jonathan for the Bruins.
Sure, yeah.
And hey, I was in Montreal at the time, so I welcome Stan Jonathan, okay?
Right.
But the code of chivalry as expressed in the code of hockey is you've got enforcers, you've got fights. People who know nothing about the sports get upset at the fights. Well, the fights are an important part of protecting your players. So, you know, one of the rules, for example, is you don't go after the other guy's goalie because goalies can't really defend themselves properly. So if somebody goes after a goalie, expect them to be jumped on. I mean, that's a way of enforcing the norms. And you don't just start a fight. What you do is you look at somebody and you say, you want to go? And if the guy nods, everybody throws down their gloves. Okay? That's the way we did it in high school back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There was sort of a code of chivalry and all that. And you get into a fight, and And the guy might be your best friend the next day.
That's
it's not
right.
a big deal.
I was just thinking the same thing. I said, you know, two things came to mind as you talk about chivalry. One, I'm thinking, always open the door for the woman. And many would get mad at that today. But more importantly, yeah, okay, you want to pick a fight? Let's go right at it. Let's go at it right now. And then at the end of the day, you'd be shaking hands. You may both be a little bit bruised. But you got over it, and I'm just hoping, and I think I get the sense that you feel the same way, that, you know, we're going through this this Punch and Judy thing right now, and you know, things will settle down, but you know, we can always expect you know, new issues to arise, new things to have to address, and if we can just do it in the context of doing it in a civil manner, I think that would. You know, make most people satisfied. In the few moments that we have left, how would you sum up the thoughts in putting Roots of Liberalism together?
When you think of things that are admirable in our politics, and they still exist, and you try to trace them back to their roots, you'll go back centuries in many cases. You'll go back to a kind of liberalism before John Locke. You'll go back to traditions and stories about things that have moved us, right? Stories like Hans Christian Andersen's little story about the little match girl, right, from which we learned the need for kindness in general. That's the idea behind my book.
And I think you, you know, from my opinion, and hope people will go out and buy Roots of Liberalism, but I think you've as they say, you nailed it. And I got to say, you know, Frank has been very, very fair in this book. You know, the ideas put forth are not extreme; they're not one way or the other. It's just putting the facts out there, and that's what's most important. Frank, if people want to reach out to you directly, get more information about your work, et cetera, how might they reach you?
Well, what you can do is go to Amazon and buy the book, and you'll make me happy. You'll make the publisher happy. And, you know, some people who want to dig around would find my email. It's fbuckley@gmu.edu. And I'm happy to chat with people. So, you know, go to it. But above all, go to Amazon.
Yeah. We always say that here. The important thing is, we just kind of skim the surface this evening. We want people to go out, buy the book, and, draw your own conclusions. From that point. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. Again, I want to thank my guest this week, author F.H. Buckley. The book is Roots of Liberalism. Go out and pick up a copy, and I'm sure you'll be glad that you did. For the Public Eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.